Chapter 29.
Here they come.
A column of knights appeared, all wearing the slate-gray tabards of the Iron Order. They filled the wide boulevard of Scholar's Way, heading toward the towering Enlightenment Arch, where Callista and her soldiers waited. Grandmaster Hecarim rode a black war horse at the head of his knights. He came to a halt some 50 paces away, and the entire column stopped with him. Even from this distance, his contempt for those who faced him was obvious. Bedecked in heavy plate, their immense snorting steeds clad in steel and mail, the Iron Order were giants compared to the lightly armored warriors of the host. The soldiers around Callista wore hardened leather cuirasses, bronze helms, and bronze greaves over their lower legs, but their arms and thighs were unprotected. Each carried a tall oval shield, a long spear, and a short sword strapped at their waist, but those seemed simple and lightweight next to the armored bulk of the Iron Order. The host had been honed into an exceptionally disciplined fighting force under Callista's guidance, but the aristocratic Iron Order was the best of the knightly orders, with the finest blades and armor money could buy. The host had never faced any of the knightly orders before, not even in training, for noble-born knights would not deign to lower themselves in such a way. Even in war, the lines drawn between the nobility and the low-born were upheld. Until today. But in Ledros, the host had a giant of its own. Clad in the heavy plate and mail afforded him by his newfound rank, he was half a head taller than even the largest knight of the Iron Order, and his presence gave his fellow soldiers strength. Nevertheless, there was unease in the ranks, and Callista stepped out and turned her back on the Iron Order to address her soldiers. The knights were not yet ready to charge. She had a few moments.
"They are just people of flesh and blood, nothing more,"
she declared, walking along the front rank.
"They will face us and they will die by our spears, just like every other foe we have faced and beaten. They do not fear us yet, but they will, and we will use their arrogance against them."
Every eye was on her. These 50 were the best of the host, the most loyal and battle-hardened of her army. All were veterans who had fought at her side for years. They would not let her down.
"They are no better than any of you, for all their finery and wealth. They are weak, for they have never had to fight for their place. They've been given everything on a silver platter. Every privilege, every honor, where you've had to fight for everything, every day of your lives. And that makes you stronger than they can ever be."
Callista's gaze flicked from eye to eye.
"I am from that privileged world. It would be hypocritical to pretend otherwise. Everything I have was given to me. I never had to work for it, and I never had to fear where my next meal was coming from. The difference between them and me is I see you. I know you. I've fought at your side and bled with you. I know your worth as soldiers and as men and women."
"Hear me now!"
she roared, her voice rising to a crescendo.
"And by the ancestors, know I speak the truth when I say, you are better than all of them. They fight for greed. We fight for honor. And today, you will teach them to fear you. Today, we will kill every damn noble bastard who tries to come through here, making them pay in blood for every step they take."
The host lifted their spears in salute and roared their approval. None was louder than Ledros, who stood in their center, his heavy sword raised high. Callista turned and rejoined the ranks. Down the road, the Iron Order were finally ready to attack. And with a dismissive gesture, Hecarim sent 100 knights forward.
"He doesn't even come to face us himself."
"He will come. When we break all those he sends against us, shame and fury will bring him to us, and then we'll kill him too. The revered ancestors will hunt him and his treacherous order of oathbreakers in the afterlife. He will never know peace.
There was a blast of a horn, and the Iron Order surged forward, urging their warhorses into a gallop.
For the general!
Bellowed Ledros, and the cry was echoed by 50 voices. The wall of horse and metal roared toward them, as unstoppable as an avalanche, yet the host faced it without faltering. Nevertheless, it would have been wrong to think they felt no fear. Callista felt it herself, making her breath come short and sharp, and her heart hammer. Her palms were sweaty and her mouth was as dry as a desert. Bravery, she knew, was not the absence of fear. It was doing what needed to be done, despite being afraid. The narrow frontage beneath the arch forced the knight's formation to contract, ensuring that they could not lap around the smaller force, nor come at them from an angle. When the knights were no more than 20 paces away, Callista gave her order.
No!
She roared, dropping into a low crouch and setting her spear, stamping her back foot onto its base to keep it secure. The entire front rank did likewise, as did the rank behind and the third, presenting a three-tiered wall of jutting spears. The fourth rank hurled their spears over the first three ranks, straight into the charging knights. Horses screamed and reared, and knights dropped from their saddles. Other knights trampled over the fallen, and their steeds tripped and fell. It was a disjointed and uneven line that reached the host, and many warhorses balked, turning and bucking to avoid the wall of spears before them. Others, driven forward by fear and the weight of numbers behind them, plowed onward. Callista rammed her spear up under the chin of a knight, even as Ledros hacked another from the saddle with a brutal blow of his sword. Knights thrown to the ground by panicked warhorses were efficiently dispatched by Callista's soldiers. More than a few of the host fell, crushed beneath flailing hooves and falling horses, or felled by blades. But in the compact space, each knight faced three or four low-born foot soldiers, and they were brought down one by one. The knight's strength was in their speed and the power of their charge, but in the tight confines beneath the Enlightenment Arch, both were blunted. The host had held against the knight's attack, and the battle now swung in their favor. No matter how many battles Callista was involved in, the deafening sound, the claustrophobic crush, the stink, and the sheer horror of killing were still shocking, almost overwhelming. There was little that could be done to prepare for it. Truthfully, she would have been disturbed if she had ever become numb to it. The Iron Order had lost all momentum and were faltering, and with a shouted order, Callista intensified the pressure against them. With a heave, the host stepped forward, thrusting with their spears. The knights were forced back, and their warhorses began to panic as they came up against those behind them pushing forward. Ledros hacked down everything that came near him, his heavy blows cleaving through armor, flesh, and bone, and every desperate strike against him was smacked aside by his immense shield. Callista's spear haft was slick with blood, but her grip didn't falter as she killed and killed again. Callista tore her spear from a fallen knight and found that a space had opened up before her. Without pause, she hurled her weapon with a grunt, dropping another enemy before snatching up another spear from the lifeless fingers of a fallen comrade. As yet another was cut down by Ledros, the knight's resolve shattered. The battle became a desperate scramble, then butchery, as the surviving knights tried to wheel their steeds around. Trapped between the unforgiving, methodical soldiers of the host and their own brethren, the knights were brought down without mercy. In moments, the whole formation of knights was in a rout, and scores were slain by the vengeful soldiers surging after them. Callista shouted an order, and the host halted before they left the confines below the Enlightenment Arch. Had they ventured into the open space beyond, it would have been a simple matter for Hecarim to have them surrounded and massacred. It wouldn't have surprised her if that had been the Grandmaster's plan all along. Many among the nobility believed that lowborn soldiers were ill-disciplined and impossible to control. Callista was pleased to prove otherwise. Ledros wiped sweat from his brow, beaming.
That was a victory for the ages. We may yet fall, but none who hears of this will ever look down upon the host again.
The soldiers of the host were smiling and laughing, reveling in what they had achieved. Callista was deeply proud, and while she didn't feel the same elation, she knew this victory would be fleeting, she pushed her exhaustion aside and forced a smile of her own.
Let them have this moment. They were arrogant and underestimated us,
she said in a quiet voice so that only Ledros could hear.
It won't happen again.
I know.
Ledros grinned.
But this is still a moment to savor.
Wearily, she turned her gaze over the killing ground, toward Hecarim. He sat motionless in the saddle, features hidden beneath his helmet, but his stiff body language spoke volumes. He was simmering with anger and burning with shame.
Good.
An angry commander took risks and made foolish decisions, and with every moment she and the host resisted, it gave more time for the Helians to escape. Corpses of knights, lowborn soldiers, and horses littered the shadowed space beneath the Enlightenment Arch, and the smooth stone underfoot was slick with blood.
That is going to be a problem.
But there was little to be done about it, and it was as hazardous to the enemy as it was to her own soldiers. Keeping a wary eye on the Iron Order, Callista commanded the archway cleared of bodies. Those of the host were hastily carried back inside the square and lined up in neat rows. A tri-pointed smear of blood was daubed between their eyes to hasten their passing to the beyond and ensure that they were recognized and welcomed by the revered ancestors. Of the injured, all but those bearing the most grievous wounds stayed in the line, determined to fight to the last. The bodies of fallen knights and their steeds were shoved forward, forming a makeshift barrier against further assaults by the Iron Order.
The king is here.
Callista looked across the open space between the two forces. There was Viego, still with Isolde cradled in his arms. The warden lurked at his side, whispering poison in his ear. The king was furious, and he snapped at Hecarim. His words didn't carry to the host, but his intent was obvious. He wanted all who stood in his way slaughtered. Now.
Wait!
Hissed Ryze, peering around the corner of the building. Behind him, Tyrus crouched in the shadows of the alley with the three orphaned children under his care. Ryze shrank out of sight as a pair of knights thundered past. He waited until they disappeared around the next corner, then glanced back at Tyrus. The Seeker adept had the little boy, Tolu, in his arms, while the twin girls, Abby and Carly, were just behind him. All three children were silent and pale, their eyes wide.
We need to go now.
Tyrus nodded.
Ready, children? Let's go, swiftly now.
Ryze ran in front, watchful for danger. It was chaos. Statues had been toppled, their heads hacked from their shoulders, and wagons and carts were overturned. A book bindery was ablaze, burning fiercely from within, filling the air with ash and smoke. Screams and shouts echoed through the street, along with the awful sound of men laughing. There were bodies as well, fallen where they had been cut down. Ryze tried not to let his gaze linger on them. Glancing back, he saw Tyrus doing his best to shield the children from the sight, but it was next to impossible. One of the twins froze, staring at the corpse of a woman. Ryze's heart lurched. He heard hoofbeats approaching through the smoke and hissed to Tyrus.
More coming! Quickly!
Tyrus knelt by the girl and gently closed the dead woman's eyes. Ryze couldn't hear what his master whispered to the girl, but she nodded, wiping at her tears, and took Tyrus's hand.
Down here!
Ryze urged, waving them toward another alley cutting between the streets. He stood at the alley entrance, ensuring that none were left behind. A pair of horsemen appeared in the distance, cantering down the street, laughing and joking. Rise could see golden artifacts bulging from their saddlebags and blood splattered across their tabards. His hands turned to fists.
This is not the time, Rise,
Tyra said at his shoulder. Swallowing his anger, he nodded and ducked into the alley behind the others.
Should we head into the vaults beneath the city? We could hide down there for months without being found.
Tyrus shook his head.
Starvation or thirst would take us, even if they didn't root us out.
He said so that only Rise could hear.
No, we need to get out of the city. We will cut northward into the scribe's quarter. The streets are narrower there. It will be easier to remain unseen. From there, we will break north toward the old woods.
There's a lot of open ground to cover before we make the tree line.
Tyrus nodded.
We will have to wait for nightfall.
Rise looked up at the sky. It was still at least 2 hours until then.
We'll need to find somewhere to lay low.
It's not safe here. We're too close to the main thoroughfare.
As if to emphasize his point, there was a shout from the street they'd just abandoned.
Search the buildings! Kill everyone you find!
Barked a harsh voice, speaking Camavoran.
Let's move!
Rise took the lead once more, guiding the group through the destruction of Helia. Guilt stalked him like a creeping specter. If he hadn't aided the psychotic warden in gaining access to the Well of Ages, would the Camavorans have returned? He felt certain the answer was no. After a fraught half hour, they found themselves in the scribe's quarter. It appeared they were behind the main force of the enemy. The streets bore evidence of violence, with doors caved in and fires burning, but they saw no sign of Camavorans. Broken glass crunched beneath Rise's boots as he glanced inside an abandoned storefront. It had been ransacked, with boxes and tables overturned and smashed.
Looks as good as anywhere else.
It's already been ransacked, so it should be safe, if we're quiet and unseen.
Tyrus nodded and ushered the group inside.
We'll shelter here until nightfall. It'll be safer to move about after dark.
Having barricaded the door, Rise took up watch, positioning himself so that he could peer out the shuttered window. Tyrus found some food in a back kitchen, and after the children had eaten their fill and settled down, he came and sat by Rise. He handed his apprentice a hunk of bread, and the two of them shared a block of cheese, slicing it with a small knife.
Do you really think Callista betrayed us?
Rise said, chewing on the tough bread. Tyrus sighed.
No, I fear she was manipulated. But I believe she was only doing what she thought was right.
How did they get the mist apart?
I saw one among them use a waystone in a way I didn't even know was possible. He opened the mist like a curtain, allowing their entire armada to sail through.
A waystone? But how would they have gotten hold of one?
Tyrus sighed deeply and looked down, his shoulders slumping.
Just before Callista left, I allowed that Warden Grail to speak with her. You remember him, the strange fellow who mistakenly knocked on my door. Though I wonder now if it was a mistake at all.
At mention of Grail, Rise tensed up, but he remained silent.
All I can surmise is that he managed to find a waystone somewhere down in the vaults, and that he gave it to Lady Callista. What a fool I am for letting him speak with her. I always knew he was an odd one, but I never imagined he'd scheme to destroy everything we have built here in Helia. All of this may be my fault.
Tyrus hung his head in despair. Rise had never seen him like this, and he wasn't sure how to respond. His own shame and guilt hung heavy upon him, and for a moment he almost confessed his own mistakes, but he couldn't bring himself to do it. They sat there in silence for a time, each pondering his own failings.
If what you guess is true,
Rise said, breaking the silence,
then the blame lies with the Warden, not with you.
Even to his own ears, it sounded hollow. Was he merely trying to assuage his own guilt?
Perhaps. And it was certainly hubris that we never considered the mist would fail us. The sentinels long warned of such a thing and urged us to be prepared. We did not listen.
Were they...
Rise fell silent as he heard footsteps outside, coming closer, glass crunching under heavy boots.
You're imagining things.
The language was instantly recognizable as Camavoran, and Rise shrank away from the window.
I'm telling you, I heard voices. Everyone's as rich as kings here. If there are survivors, they'll have gold. This is a waste of time. Come on, you heard the Iron Harbinger's horn. The Grand Master calls.
The footsteps went past the window and Rise and Tyrus remained motionless, scarce daring to breathe. There was silence. Then the door was kicked in. Grail grinned as another wave of knights charged toward the tight knot of Camavoran foot soldiers gathered beneath the Enlightenment Arch. His grin widened as a dozen knights fell, dropped by hurled spears. He didn't care that Callista and her soldiers were mounting a desperate defense of the masters, nor even that they seemed to be getting the better of the knights once again. He reveled in the mayhem and the chaos, the panic and the confusion. The screams of the dying were the sweetest of music to him, and it made him laugh that the terrified masters within the tower could hear that death, knowing that their own end was near. The defense couldn't last, yet it held strong. They were fighting off this latest assault as effectively as they had the others. In fact, this wave seemed even more disastrous for the Iron Order, for the infantry's grim wall impeded their path while providing a measure of defense for the foot soldiers. Grail watched the giant of a man who had come to Callista's defense on the docks cleave knights left and right, hacking like a butcher at his slab, and he saw the lithe figure of Callista weave through the combat like a dancer, impaling enemies with every spear thrust. Again the charge faltered, horses slipping and panicking, and more knights were dragged down from their saddles and stabbed to death on the ground as their mounts fled. The Camavoran king roared in fury, spittle flying from his mouth.
I don't care if your order bleeds to the last, just clear the way!
He screamed at the leader of his knights, Hecarim.
Send them all in!
Grail tittered, amused by the madness of the foreign king. He was spiraling rapidly, but that suited the warden fine. For his part, the Grand Master looked equally angry, his face flushed red beneath his helmet. The entrance to the archway was strewn with so many bodies that another cavalry charge would be futile. He slid from his saddle and angrily threw his reins to his squire, barking orders. The other knights followed his lead, dismounting and seeing their horses led away. With his cruelly bladed glaive clasped in both hands, Hecarim ordered the advance, determined to bring an end to things once and for all. The king seemed determined to fight as well, ordering two nearby knights to bear his queen. Grail's grin faltered. A massive, shimmering blade materialized in Viego's hands, appearing out of nowhere, and his grin turned into a frown. This did not fit with his plan. If the king fought, then he might fall. No. He needed him alive, at least until his soldiers cleared the way to the Well of Ages.
There is another way into the square, Lord King. A way less protected than this one.
What?
Said Viego, head snapping in his direction.
Why did you not say so before?
I did not think your knights would be held by that rabble.
Tell me of this other way,
Viego said. And the warden's grin crept back onto his face.